And similarly, with emerging diseases, we find many of these diseases, whether it's corona or, you know, H1N1 flu or swine flu, they come out of our broken ecosystems. They come out of like what are called zoonotic diseases, diseases that jump from animals into people. And that's from bad forms of agriculture and bad kind of invasions of ecosystems where things that normally lay dormant jump into our population. So again, I think keep our eye on the long term. We can stop this coronavirus, but we're going to have another one in a few years if we don't stop the underlying cause.
Welcome to Social Entrepreneur. My name is Tony Lloyd. I'm a former Fortune 500 executive, but today I spend my time with changemakers who are making an impact in the world. We hear exciting stories of ordinary people just like you who are making a difference. They share their successes, their failures, and what they're learning along the way. Thanks for being with me today. Let's get started. Hi, and welcome back to Social Entrepreneur and today's guest, Jonathan Foley of Project Drawdown. Now, Project Drawdown has one clear goal, and that is, in its name, drawdown. So what is drawdown? It's the point when greenhouse gas levels in the atmosphere start to decline. Why are we going to talk about the climate crisis when there's this big coronavirus, COVID-19 pandemic going on around the world? Well, that's one of the first questions I get to with Dr. Jonathan Foley of Project Drawdown today. And we talk about the fact that we have to take a systems view, a systemic view of both the climate crisis and coronavirus. So he's going to explain all that here in a minute. Project Drawdown has what they call the drawdown framework. So it's stopping the sources of greenhouse gas pollution, supporting and enhancing the sinks of greenhouse gases found in nature, and helping society to achieve broader transformations. And that's what we are about in this season. We're going to talk about electricity production, food, agriculture, and land use. We're going to talk about industry. We're going to talk about transportation. We're going to talk about buildings and then other energy-related emissions. So we're going to talk about ways to reduce greenhouse gases while transitioning to a just and equitable clean energy future. And so that's what we're all about this year, and that's why I wanted to start with this conversation. So here he is, Dr. Jonathan Foley of Project Drawdown.
So hi, I'm John Foley. I'm the executive director of Project Drawdown. Project Drawdown is an organization that serves as the world's leading go-to place about climate solutions. We're a group of scientists and communicators that are constantly evaluating what are the best things we can do about climate change and how we can make them happen.
John, I know that we're in the middle of a big global pandemic. All of our assumptions have sort of been blown up in the last few weeks. A lot is changing right now. So why would we be paying attention to climate change, the climate crisis, global warming, and all that?
Well, obviously, the world's attention is correctly focused on this pandemic, as it should immediately be. Absolutely. There's no one who would argue against that, I hope. But we have to remember that there's an underlying pattern to these kinds of events. For example, we've had more and more severe storms and more floods and more droughts and more fires in the last few decades because of climate change. That doesn't mean we only deal with those individual events. We have to look at those events and the bigger picture that's causing them to occur more frequently. Same thing with infectious disease. In the last 30 to 40 years, we've seen so many new diseases ripping through the human population. Most of them are what we call zoonotic diseases. Most of them come out of animals and out of broken ecosystems or out of very bad forms of agriculture. Whether it's coronavirus or SARS or avian flu or swine flu, you keep going back, there are all these new diseases that are really because of our bad use of agriculture and tearing down ecosystems. So just like climate change, we can't just look at one fire. We have to look at the entire pattern of what's happening. Same thing with the disease. We can't just look at coronavirus and forget that a lot of these new diseases are become common because of our destruction of our world's ecosystems. So again, we focus on today's events, but we have to look at the bigger pattern tomorrow.
And so you've been looking at patterns for a long time. Let's get a little bit to your story, John. You would be described as a climate scientist, right?
Yeah, I have my PhD is in atmospheric science from the University of Wisconsin down in Madison. But I also taught a lot about ecology and ecosystems. So I'm a climate scientist by training, but I've also worked a lot on ecology and kind of ecosystems around the world, which are pretty analogous kind of ideas. Climate and ecosystems overlap so much.
Yeah. Now, you did not start Project Drawdown, right? You came in and took the helm from the original founders. So you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So Project Drawdown started a few years ago. It was co-founded by Paul Hawken and Amanda Ravenhill a number of years ago. And Paul's a well-known author and entrepreneur around environmental issues. And they did this amazing thing where they asked a very simple question, which was, hey, do we have enough of the tools we need to stop climate change or don't we? And frankly, the experts and the scientists and stuff didn't really answer that question very effectively. So they went out and tried to answer it themselves by doing research on about 100 different climate solutions, asking a pretty basic question, like how big could this solution be? How effective would it be for every investment you made in it? And then what would it cost initially and over the lifetime of the technology? And no one had really done that before, not in a really rigorous way and consistently across all those different solution levers. So they did that. And then another brilliant thing they did a few years back was instead of writing it in like a journal article or some white paper somewhere, they wrote a coffee table book, a popular book, simply called Drawdown. And that's become a New York Times bestseller. It's actually one of the best-selling climate books of the last decade. It's still selling pretty well. I joined the organization a little over a year ago when they'd kind of moved from being a book project to more of a permanent nonprofit, where we're now building up a kind of continuous research team that's always evaluating climate solutions. And we've moved from a book to an online publication that we'll publish continuously to bring the world the latest, greatest information about climate solutions. And the word drawdown, so people are kind of confused what that means. It's not just about the things that suck carbon out of the atmosphere, like carbon sinks. What it really means is drawdown is a moment in the future when CO2 and other greenhouse gas levels stop climbing. They basically stabilize, and then we bring them back down again. It's kind of when we bend the curve of greenhouse gases back downward. That's the moment we stop climate change from going any further, and we can begin maybe a very long process of restoring our climate back to something more normal. Yeah. So it's all about bending curves, just like we do with viruses. We get to do it with our climate as well, bring things back to normal.
Yeah, I think people are learning a lot about the curve, and they're learning a lot about exponential growth that they didn't really understand before. But there are all these different sources of greenhouse gases. And I just love, you wrote a really amazing piece. It's on Medium. And it was about these different, well, it was about a lot of things, but you have this lovely little chart where you talk about the sources of greenhouse gases. So, you know, people talk about, oh, well, it's clean energy, right? So if only we get solar, or, you know, only if we could solve our transportation problem, then that would fix everything. But you take a more holistic view of this. So could you kind of fly us over when you think about the categories, or you think about sort of the different sources of greenhouse gases? Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, sure. First of all, it's important to recognize that there are about four major greenhouse gases, not just one, that we humans are putting in the atmosphere. One of them is carbon dioxide. We hear a lot about that. There's also methane, or CH4, or natural gas. Also, there's something called nitrous oxide. And then we have this last category of gases called fluorinated gases. All four of those are actually major heat-trapping gases, and they each behave a little bit differently in terms of their ability to retain heat, but also how long they live in the atmosphere. But if we put them on a level playing field of kind of how much they warm the planet over, let's say, 100 years, we find that CO2 from fossil fuels is by far the biggest part of that, but it's about 60 to 65%. We'll call it 62% is the best number I can find, of climate change is caused by fossil fuels releasing CO2. So that's more than half. But we also have CO2 emitted from cement. When cement is curing, believe it or not, it releases CO2 chemically into the air. We release CO2 from deforestation. When we burn down a rainforest in the Amazon or Indonesia, that's also burning carbon. It just happens to be alive carbon instead of dead carbon. And that puts CO2 in the air. And then we got methane. Now, methane comes from fracking and from natural gas pipelines when they leak natural gas that goes into the atmosphere, warming the air even more. But also methane comes from animals, especially cattle, and cattle burp methane quite a lot, but also comes from lamb, and it comes from landfills and other biological sources that we humans have made. And then we've got nitrous oxide, which is the third category gas, and that comes from fertilizers and manures. When we use too much fertilizer, too much manure on a farmer's field, especially when it's cold and wet, like it is in Minnesota right now, you can see that nitrous oxide forms out of the soil and gets released into the air, trapping even more heat. And then finally, we have these so-called fluorinated gases, which are mainly used as industrial chemicals and coolants. So they're used a lot in refrigerators and air conditioners and freezers. And when those are those little coils break open, if they're not disposed of properly, those gases can leak into the atmosphere, causing a significant amount of warming. So those are the gases, again, CO2, methane, nitrous oxide, and fluorinated gases. So it's more than one. But then when we get to the economic sectors, the places that humans do stuff that puts these gases into the air, it's actually pretty interesting. There are about five major sources of greenhouse gas pollution. 90% of it could fit in five fingers, right, on one hand. The first is electricity at about 25%. Then we've got food and agriculture and land use. That's about 24%, about equal to energy, electricity, that is. Then we have industry, then we have transportation, and we have buildings. So 90% of emissions come from just five things: making electricity, making food, our industrial activities, transportation, and buildings. So those are the five places to focus on reducing our emissions.
And is your website sort of laid out in those categories? So if I was saying, well, what solutions are available right now in, let's say, transportation? Can I go to your website, find transportation, and then find solutions?
Absolutely. So just go to drawdown.org, and everything is laid out in exactly that way. So we have solutions in these five emissions categories, again, like electricity, food, industry, transport, and buildings. But we also have solutions that are tied to carbon sinks. We've heard a lot about those, like the sinks we could have on land by like protecting trees and planting more of them, or protecting the soil and maybe farming a little bit better, or even in the oceans, or maybe through technology. So we have carbon source solutions, reducing the primary pollution. And we have some solutions on the sinks that help remove that pollution that we can't avoid into the atmosphere. So we kind of look across about 10 categories of sources and sinks and show major solutions in each. And it's a good way to organize it and a good way to think about it.
One of the things that I thought was really interesting was, a few decades ago, we were all talking about there's a hole in the ozone. And, you were talking about these fluorinated gases. And so we were like, these fluorinated gases, they're causing this hole in the ozone. So let's switch. And now we're going to have a different fluorinated gas. So we actually took away two different fluorinated gas, or took away one and replaced it with another. But that had a big impact on climate change, didn't it?
Well, it's had a small impact so far, but it could have a much bigger one in the future, because so many people in the world are now rich enough to be able to buy their first air conditioners, mm-hmm. their first refrigerators and freezers, and they often live in pretty warm places without a lot of regulation about how to dispose of those chemicals. So you're right, we used to use chlorofluorocarbons in industry and refrigeration. We've since replaced them with hydrofluorocarbons, which are ozone-friendly, but they're not especially climate-friendly. So now we have to make kind of a third transition to another set of refrigerants for cooling. And we're not going to give up our refrigerators and air conditioners, I don't think. So we need to kind of figure out what are the next generation chemicals that can be used safely, that are also not too expensive, but don't have these kind of impacts on the atmosphere that these gases do.
Right. So if I'm an intergovernmental agency, or I'm, let's say at the state level, or even, at a regional level, I could go to your website, and if I'm in transportation, I could look at some solutions, right?
Absolutely. I mean, the solutions we present numbers for all of them in terms of the size of that solution, as well as its initial cost and its lifetime cost. And its lifetime costs are often negative, meaning that we saved money by doing these solutions. But they're presented at the global level. So we kind of we look at, if this solution were implemented all over the world, how big would it be and how much would it cost? We can, of course, start to drill down by changing the models we have to apply to a place like Minnesota versus Georgia versus, São Paulo or someplace. And we can kind of see how the variations of the local conditions would change that. But most of the numbers kind of hold up pretty well everywhere you go.
If I'm, let's say I'm a mom and I'm sitting around a table with my kids, and my kids go, what could we possibly do about climate change? Is Project Drawdown the place you're going to find answers to that question?
Yeah, soon it will be. We are developing a new project within Project Drawdown called Drawdown Learn, which is actually to have a lot more kind of educational components. Some aim for professionals who need to learn more about climate change for their work, but most of it's going to be aimed at, regular folks like all of us who want to learn a little bit more and have just a few minutes to invest and like to know what they can do, not just what they could study. So yeah, we're going to have some kind of action guides and short kind of tutorials and things like this for household climate action or community climate action. And if anything, this virus has taught us that, yes, we need good policy at the top, and we can tell the difference between the states that have good leaders when it comes to this and ones that have bad leaders, or the fact we have nothing in Washington working right now very well. But we see that cities and our individual behaviors matter a lot. One sick person doing something stupid can actually cause a lot of harm. Well, climate change is kind of similar. It shows that we do have roles to play as individuals if we work together. Just one person wearing a mask and staying home isn't going to stop an epidemic, but all of us doing that can. Same thing with climate change. If all of us start to pay attention to our use of energy in the home, our diets, our food waste, the things we buy, how we dispose of them, there are all sorts of things that end up being good solutions anyway, because they often save us money and make us healthier. But there are things we can do to really begin to move the needle. Of course, it doesn't replace good policy. We need that too, or good investments or good business practice. But my point is, rather than choosing one lever to change the world, I say we pull them all. Let's see what we can do individually while, Washington's kind of getting its act together and while states are doing what they can.
Right. So give us some hope here. This would be a good time to have some hope, right? Because we can talk about, there's a pandemic going on, and there's, fires in Australia that have just gone out, and, there's global warming and all this stuff. And, we could spend a long time sort of diving down in that. But as we think about the hope for the future, right? So in, you talked about electricity. What are some of the solutions that are currently available or in the pipeline that we could focus on?
Well, electricity, it's not easy, but it's probably the easiest sector to solve for right now, because we have so much left to do on electricity efficiency. So much could still be done with better lighting, better air conditioning, better building systems, better automation, things like this. There's so many wins, still low-hanging fruits of things we needed to do in the 70s and 80s to get better performance out of the electrical system we have today. And then we can switch the electrical system to tomorrow's by, installing more utility scale solar, large wind projects, things like this, which are now cheaper than their fossil fuel counterparts. What's amazing right now is not being green is closing down coal power plants around the country. It's just economics. It's the market because they cost too much to operate. Building a brand new solar farm or wind farm often is cheaper than operating your old coal power plant is. So why the hell do you want to do that? So we're now at the point where the market is taking over from policy. We needed R&D first to invent a solar panel and things like this, then make them cheaper. Then we needed policy to kind of get them in place, make them even cheaper still. But now markets are taking over, and I think market forces are beginning to win on the electricity sector. And we're seeing coal disappear, and I think pretty soon we're going to see a lot of natural gas get phased out too, as solar, wind, and other kinds of electrical systems get better and better and cheaper and cheaper.
Yeah.
That's great news. We also see good news in a few other sectors, like the food system. I think we're starting to see some early signs of interest that food waste is something we can really rally around. About a third of all the food in the world is wasted, which means about a third of the emissions tied to making food, including deforestation and fertilizers and manure and cattle burping and all this kind of stuff, a third of that could just go away, again, through efficiency measures. Kind of like energy efficiency in your homes matters, so does food efficiency. So, we got a lot of tools right there. And then we could eat maybe a little less meat and transition to a lower carbon diet. Not everybody wants to be vegan and so on. I'm like, you don't have to. Just cut back a little bit, maybe follow your doctor's advice on how much meat we should eat, And we'd all eat a little bit less anyhow. And that's pretty good. That's a good start. Or eating more chicken instead of beef, for example, that helps too. So there's actually a lot of good news. And the best news of all is that climate change is solvable. We've proven it, others have too, that when we deploy these about 100 solutions, we put them all out there, we actually can stop climate change somewhere in the 2040s to 2050s if we really get going. There's no laws of physics we're breaking. We're doing things that cost money up front, but the return on the investment is at least like 5 to 1, not even counting the avoided damages climate change would cause if we don't do something.
Right.
So this is good for the economy. It's good for jobs. It's good for air quality, good for our health, good for our security, and good for the planet. So let's go. You know, it's all ready to go. It's a lot of good stuff waiting to happen here.
Yeah. I do want to ask you about one more thing, and then we'll get a little advice or a little call to action here. But one thing I'm aware of is Countdown. So what is Countdown, and how does all that work?
Countdown is a project that's been launched by TED, not TED the guy, TED the organization, TED.org, of TED Talks. A lot of folks remember the 18-minute TED Talks. They're all very famous people who get to be on stage and say brilliant things. Countdown is going to be a TED conference designed exclusively to focus on climate solutions. Before the pandemic, it was scheduled to be in October of this year, 2020, on October 10th. In Norway, in Bergen. It probably will still happen, whether it's virtual or maybe delayed a little bit, or maybe the world will be back up and running totally by then. I don't know. But the idea is that a lot of people will congregate in Norway and then globally through the what they call TEDx, kind of local satellite events, which will certainly be in most cities in the world too, and focusing entirely on climate solutions. We've heard a lot about the climate problems from everybody. Now let's hear about solutions. And we can't just hear one or two of them. Our research shows, and many others would too, that there isn't one solution to climate change. Anybody who tells you they have the solution to climate change is just trying to sell you something. And it turns out our analysis shows we need literally dozens and dozens of them to really make it work. So we're going to need lots and lots of different solutions working at different scales all together. And that's where I think a community like the one that might come out of Countdown or others, where we really do tackle things like transportation and electricity and food and buildings and building materials and refrigerants, as well as forest and coastlines and natural sinks of carbon. We need all of that, and nobody can do that alone. And there's no silver bullet here, but there's a lot of silver buckshot laying around, and that's what we have to go use.
I like that, silver buckshot. A call to action. So people have been hanging out with you and me for a while, and they could just hit next on their podcast player, or they could go and do something. But what would you call on people to go and do?
Well, gosh, right now, I think we're right in the middle of this pandemic of coronavirus right now here in April 2020. It's a very unusual time, but I guess I would just remember to keep our eye on the long-term issues, not just the problem of today. Of course, of a pandemic or a forest fire or an earthquake or some disaster, you have to triage things and put that first, of course. But when that dust starts to settle, let's look back at the bigger patterns that, hey, climate change is making these severe weather events and these fires a lot worse. We need to address it. And similarly, with emerging diseases, we find many of these diseases, whether it's corona or H1N1 flu or swine flu, they come out of our broken ecosystems. They come out of like what are called zoonotic diseases, diseases that jump from animals into people. And that's from bad forms of agriculture and bad kind of invasions of ecosystems where things that normally lay dormant jump into our population. So again, I think keep our eye on the long term. We can stop this coronavirus, but we're going to have another one in a few years if we don't stop the underlying cause. Same thing with the forest fires in Australia. We may immediately put out the crisis, but we get to talk about the big picture problem of climate change as well. So don't lose sight of the long-term big picture, even when we're addressing the crisis of the day. And the problem is if we keep going the way we're going, the crises are only going to be more fierce and more frequent and cause more harm. That's why we have to look at these bigger underlying issues.
So John, remind us one more time, if we're looking for Project Drawdown online or on social media, where would we look?
Yeah, well, our website is simply drawdown.org for the web. And we also, on that website, you can download a free book called The Drawdown Review. It's totally free, just came out about a month ago. So I encourage folks to look for that. And on Twitter and Facebook, you can just search for Project Drawdown, one word, and you'll find us with a very active following on Facebook and Twitter mostly. We also are on Instagram and a couple other places as well.
Very good. But John, thanks for being with us on Social Entrepreneur.
You bet. Thanks for having me. Cheers.
And thanks to you, the listener, for joining us today. You are the reason that we produce Social Entrepreneur. You can find the show notes, bonus material, and more at tonyloyd.com. That's TonyLoyd.com. Well, listen, thanks so much for joining me today. And until next time, please remember to use this one short, amazing life and go make an impact. Thanks. We'll talk to you next time on Social Entrepreneur.